Hello. I highly recommend writing a book of nonfiction. It will only take you a decade. No, thank you so much for having me. This is, I think, my third or fourth time doing Hemingway's in the 16 years I have lived in this city. And it is always an honor. It is always a pleasure. At my very first one, Jimmy pulled me aside and he said, "You can read." And I still have that kind of etched in my soul. And I always think to myself, I can read, and that feels good. And I knew what he meant. It was, you had to be there, but it meant more than that, I swear. Okay, so I'm gonna read one really old poem from my 10-year-old book of poetry, and then I'm gonna read some new stuff. A friend asked me to read this, and I thought, I never read this poem, so why not? It's called Icarus. Call me Icarus, from the Greek Ikaros, meaning follower, meaning it wasn't my idea, meaning I only flew because I had to. The number of exteriority, 22, pushes me toward the stars. It's in my name, you see. And when combined with my karmic 6, well, hell, I got wings. Who said don't try, right? I am cautionary. Don't fly too close to the sun. We only have wings of wax. Anyway, I am ruled by light and water. Question and answer. What is it like raised in a labyrinth? How hot is it? The sun. I was born in a woman's deathbed, my mother a slave. As for homes without escape, fates bound by unending hedges and the constant threat of a monster engineered by gods and family? Well, that was normal. Honest, real, part of the plan from the beginning. I was taught Earth to better understand sky. Call me Icarus. Flying steady ain't my thing. Odysseus had it easy. The rock of Scylla, the hard place of Charybdis. There is a between. Mine was water and fire. The sky betwixt, not big enough for my desire. Ocean and sun, both calls much sweeter than dilemma. What is a boy untested? What is a boy wearing his father's wings? What is a boy never kissed even by the sun? The karmic 6, that's all I know. The weight of obligation, restriction, scrupulous, needy, wanting care, never whole. A boy defined by the man who made him wings. Hello. But here's the tickle of the wind as you feel inevitability's tender caress. I have flown. I flapped wings and felt the undercurrent lift me, my body. I lost touch of ground and hugged sky with my toes. I've looped stars and breathed in clouds. I have written my name in your oceans. I have written my name in your sun. I have written my name in your breath. They will tell you that I fell, that my giddiness overwhelmed me, that I flew too high, too close, too hot, that I melted, broken. Don't do it. Don't flirt with dilemma. Don't escape a lifetime of confinement to die minutes from freedom, to die minutes from a different kind of labyrinth. Call me Icarus, from the Greek Ikaros, meaning follower, meaning it wasn't my idea, meaning I only flew because I had to. Icaro, hijo de Dádalo, Icarus, son of sun, Icarus, conqueror of sky, Icarus, boy unleashed from maze, boy who flew, Icarus, more than caution, Icarus, myth, Icarus, who dared love touch life at its origin, the gods. They watched me fall, indifferent in their love. For they know, this is fate, this is number, this is constellation. I fall from the sky, I fall from the sky, but to fall from the sky, but to fall, I first got to fly. So it has been a summer of Poetry Slam for me. I retired from Poetry Slam a few years ago, and then my friend Cynthia French in Seattle was like, "Hey, let's gather a whole bunch of old poets and start competing at Poetry Slams across the country again." So we did it, and we went to Portland, we went to Columbus, we did a couple shows, it was really fun, we got scored terribly. But I got to write new poems, and I got to write poems especially for performance. And those of you that know me know that I tend to really enjoy, well, the guts of it all. So this is called Placenta Poem. I have come to lodge a complaint against Salma Hayek for her role in the Imagine Foundation Award nominee for Best Film of 1997, Fools Rush In. So there she is, after a few pushes on the Hoover Dam, holding her baby in traffic as Matthew Perry, rest in glory, stares at her in awe, but there is no moment that shows the afterbirth, the tomato harvest gone awry, the ratatouille of childbirth. We never see Salma Hayek give birth to an Easter ham. Salma Hayek never delivers the placenta. The placenta. The womb's filtration system, the Brita of life. The hunk of ossobuco inside the impregnated uterus that shields and delivers stuff, whatever science, it doesn't matter. The placenta forms. The placenta moves, and when she is done, the placenta leaves. What do any of us really know about the marbled bacon of existence? Some turn the placenta into pills, an unsmoothie, eating themselves to survive the trauma of birth. But that shit is for witches. Most baby poppers remain silent on the matter leading to this, the massive conspiracy I bring before you today. Salma Hayek lied to us by omission in the film that Matthew Perry once called his best. And so, that's right. I urge you to consider the horror of shitting out a baby from your vagina, which one of my lovers once called the hallway to heaven. And then your body goes, nah, dog, you got one more push in you. And the nurses put on their wetsuit. The doctor peers into the slip and slide that your body has become, and out come the zombified remains of a partially digested platypus. And to the non-breeders, I see you. I dare you to be horrified. When is the last time you temporarily grew an organ and then ejected it from your body with the force of a small pony? Because I did it twice. And if that isn't heavy metal, then I don't know what is. I want to say thank you to this body, to this life and gumbo-making machine, this dolphin through a meat grinder that kept my tiny human safe. Thank you. You hammered watermelon. You used up bag topper. Eternal and temporary coq au vin. The filet mignon of mortality. Thank you. I love you the way that Matthew Perry's character loves Salma Hayek's in Fool's Rush In, which is to say, I love you like you existed within me deeply. And to Salma Hayek and all the other birthing protagonists out there, we deserve to see the shredded and barbecue broiled hog's head we call the placenta. Placenta, from the Greek for flat disc cake, as in some of us get to birth our cake and eat it too. When I was in third grade, I read this book called When We Were Very Young by A.A. Milne, author of Winnie the Pooh, and he taught me everything I needed to know about poetry, which is that there's always an image at the center. Oftentimes it tells you a good story. And the best is when you tap into your childhood self. And for me, that is having fun. So in the spirit of fun, I'm going to do something I don't think that's ever happened at the Hemingway's poetry reading before. I'm going to ask my husband to come here, and we are going to perform a duet. So let me introduce Jesse Welch. Jesse Welch was in the documentary Louder Than a Bomb as a teenage poet. He is also a member of the Pittsburgh Poetry Collective and co-founder of The Nasty Slam with me. We co-edited a book about the Pittsburgh poetry scene and poetry in it called Louder Than a Mic, or In the Shadow of a Mic. Oh my gosh, I'm so nervous. I've never done this like at a like golf clap reading. It's very different. Okay. I think you should be here so they can hear us both, yeah?
Makes sense.
Yeah, we're going to do this very intimately. No, we're not. I apologize for all of you who have not seen Bluey. It is a show about an Australian dog and her parents. This is our poem about how we feel about Bluey. Okay. The following is a public service announcement.
There is a danger in this world, plaguing parents planet-wide.
It is above and beyond, nay, down under.
The greatest threat to peace known to parent kind.
We speak, of course, of Bluey. Dun, dun, Dundee.
Really?
You may believe her innocent.
All cartoon blue healer smiles and Disney Plus family values, the Australian imagination at its best,
and that one wordless episode
that always makes us cry,
Bluey is a menace who must be muzzled like the dog she is.
Because in every episode of Bluey, Mum and Dad play along with every game.
And it's all good until you've been woken up by a four-year-old in full queen regalia cannonballing into your stomach, because mums and dads are supposed to play along
like Bluey taught her. We have now become swimming pools as her tiny elbows.
Why do they hurt so much?
Dig into your ribs. Mum, you're a boat to New Zealand.
All aboard! Dad, you're frozen and can't talk.
I love you.
Mum, Dad, pretend you're a driver with a frustrated passenger trying to get to the airport.
Oops, I forgot something crucial back home.
And it's not that these are unreasonable expectations.
But they are unreasonable expectations.
Who has time to assemble LaGuardia in their living room for 10 minutes of role play?
And you could say, just turn it off. Just switch the streaming service.
But you can't, because Bluey is omnipotent.
She's like sand. Coarse and rough and irritating, and she gets everywhere.
She shows up uninvited to every birthday party, making it impossible to avoid her delightfully creative whimsy. Our kids now speak with Australian accents.
Crikey!
Fuck Bluey!
There's really only one solution.
We must murder Bluey with our bare hands.
No, you cannot murder a cartoon.
But you told me to indulge my imagination.
You know, I used to have one of those, too. Saturday mornings, choreographing elaborate routines to Paula Abdul songs, pretending I was Smurfette.
Hey, girl, holding weddings for my Hot Wheels cars under a floral huffa.
L'chaim! I played for hours with my friend Karina, imagining soap operas worthy of Telemundo. And you know what?
I didn't make my parents help.
We're too old for this shit.
We just want to hide in the backyard.
Smoke some weed.
And pretend we don't have to clean up LaGuardia in our living room. Is that so much to ask?
Apparently.
Because there's a human cannonball and fairy wings swimming in my direction.
Let's play Keepy Uppy for the next 5 hours!
Yay.
I have 1 minute left. So I will do a tradition that I have done many, many years and read the very last book in my poem as a farewell, and then I'm done. Thank you so much for this. Thank you for letting us do something weird at Hemingway's. Thank you for indulging us and our spirit of play. You are the best audience in town, hands down. It is always a pleasure to read here, and thank you, Joan, for having me. And thank you, Chris, who's not here, but to, you know, I'm sure he has feelings about Bluey at this exact moment. So, it's a doggy dog world. Colonel Dinosaur curls up next to me, his wet nose soon in my lap, his schnauzer mustache impossible. When I ignore him, he doth complain, his furry eyebrows insistent, his tongue a quiet alarm raspy in its metronome. For a bit, I indulge him, scratching snout and ears, his nubby tail stump wagging furiously, a windshield wiper in monsoon. Soon I tire. I cannot caress him ad infinitum. Like all humans, I cannot love anything in eternity except in promise. When I stop, he will sit in protest, roll over, expose belly, vulnerable as all creatures begging love must be. I offer him a shrug. And then Leela and Lola mutt their way through his line of sight, and Colonel Dinosaur leaves me for them, because, you know, bitches. Thank you.